You know what would have been the greatest segue of all time? Speaking of Kirk Cameron, let's talk about Dunkirk.
Oh, jeez. No thanks. No thanks. Oh, no.
That was terrible.
That was bad.
Whatever. I don't care.
Screen of Death. My name is Adrian.
And my name is Boo.
So we're on episode 75.
Continuing with the movie theme.
Yeah.
Because them sports jerseys.
Yeah.
Getting a little hard to find.
It's tough, yeah.
So yeah, 1975, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Which nice.
I think won Best Picture.
Classic.
Some little film called Jaws.
Oh.
And if you're into, you know, the genre, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Nice.
One of the... the great little fantasy comedies of all time.
That's right.
Infinitely quotable.
Is that the one where they have the horse and they're doing the coconuts?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Such a great film.
Oh, that's great.
Brave Sir Robin. Brave Sir Robin.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right on, dude.
Yeah. So what you been up to?
Oh, before we get into the regular part of the show, I just wanted to give a special sort of announcement. This is a cool landmark for us. It's episode 75. It's also our 50th edition of the Movie Club. That's where, after we gave our main reviews of three recent movies, that's where Bill picks a movie. We watch it, and it's always something I haven't seen. Bill somehow knows what I've seen, what I haven't seen. And it's a really cool curated list. So we reached 50, and I think that's a milestone that's worth celebrating. And we've got some goodies in store for that discussion. We're going to talk about the 50th film, which is In the Mood for Love. We're also going to talk about some of the other movies in the context of, you know, favorites of ours in that 50. So
we have a list.
That's right.
And we're like top five. So, of course, I don't have five.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I was like, it was like asking me to sort out like which of my nieces and nephews are my favorite. Like, I can't do it. It's so tough. Of course,
you like the tall one the most.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, you've got that to look forward to. So.
Hell yeah.
I just wanted to briefly talk about this Hot Ones fan challenge we're going to be participating in this week. When I say we, me and my brother Kyle are going to eat 10 hot wings that get progressively hotter.
You guys are madmen.
That's right.
Absolute madmen.
Yeah. So I had to special order these hot sauces off some website online, and it costs a lot of freaking money for hot sauce. Like, that's the most I'll ever spend on hot sauce.
Well, luckily, you probably don't have a lifetime supply.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure you're not going to, like, baste it in it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, some of these sauces, I think, are intended to be, like, a little drop in your chili or whatever sauce you're making, or your salsa, homemade salsa, stuff like that.
And that would put me on the ground.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to stand up for a couple hours.
Yeah.
I'm the whitest man alive when it comes to food. I can't eat that kind of stuff.
That's
right.
It would
kill me.
Yeah.
It really would.
It would.
Yeah.
So the challenge is based off a popular YouTube series called Hot Ones, which is hosted by Sean Evans. He interviews celebrities and actors and musicians and YouTube personalities and other famous people. And he just asks some questions. And each wing gets progressively hotter, as previously mentioned. And by the end, people are either tapping out or they're freaking out and crying and shouting at him for making them eat these hot wings. So, have that to look forward to.
Please don't die.
I'll try not to. And for those interested, I'll post a link in the show notes to my brother's YouTube channel. We'll be posting the video there.
Yeah, so. They're going to film it.
Yeah, we're going to shoot it.
Can't wait to see this debauchery.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Should be fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, it's busy summertime. Like, it seems every weekend I'm going up island or visiting friends and family and also seeing movies in between. So it's been a hectic hectic time during my days off.
Yeah, last weekend we went to Vancouver to see Dunkirk.
That's right.
In 70mm.
Yeah.
And saw a bunch of friends, which is always awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Good trip.
Yeah.
Adrian, with a little bit of a clutch moment, a couple days before we went, he's like, maybe we should get a reservation for the ferry.
Oh, yeah.
Because we might not be able to get home. It could be busy.
Yeah.
If we hadn't had that, would have been bad news.
We would have been stuck there for another 2 or 3 hours, minimum. Yeah.
And I might not have been able to watch Game of Thrones that night.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. That would have been bad news.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was long enough. It takes 6 or 6.5 hours to get there and back.
Yeah. Adrian had the car.
That's right.
Thank God Adrian had his car.
That's right.
That was a good trip.
Yeah, man. That was awesome.
So happy to see all the people.
Yeah.
Marina Antunes, Melissa McDowell, Dale McGladrey.
Yeah.
You're all choice. You're all champs.
Also, Dan the Man was there.
Dan the Man was there, too. Yeah. But yeah, it was a fun time. More on Dunkirk
in
a little bit.
Yeah.
I got some stuff to say.
Cool.
We had a little bit of an experience.
That's right. We did.
Is that it for you? I got some stuff.
That's it for me.
All right. So I've finally paid for everything for my Fantastic Fest /VIF vacation.
Sweet.
I got my hotel for VIF, except for it starts on the Saturday, not the Friday.
Okay.
I don't quite have a place to stay yet for the Friday.
Oh.
So I'm just going to get another hotel.
Wow.
But yeah, so 14 days cost me like $1,100.
That's hardcore, man.
$69 a night.
That's not too bad.
Not bad.
Yeah, I guess that's not too bad.
Off season.
It is.
It's beautiful.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I was pretty happy with that. I was kind of thinking it might cost me like $1,500. So I'm kind of happy about that.
Yeah.
2 weeks till English footy.
Yeah, man. That's right around the corner, dude.
Can't wait, man. We're winning the championship. Don't want to brag,
but we're
winning the championship this year.
Probably will.
It's going to be great. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Red Sox are in second. We're half a game behind the Red Sox, behind the Yankees.
Okay.
Which really sucks because I hate the Yankees. Did you read that the Cubs gave Steve Bartman a ring today?
No.
You know who Steve Bartman is?
No.
Remember about 15 years ago, the Cubs were 5 outs away from going to the World Series?
Oh, yeah.
And that fan caught that ball?
Yeah.
That's Steve Bartman.
No way.
They gave him a ring today.
No way.
As to like break the hex.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that's really awesome. You got to do stuff like that. That dude didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
He was a Cubs fan.
Yeah. It's just you're in the moment, right?
Yeah. And they gave him a giant ring that had his name on it. Made it like diamonds. And
no way.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Super cool.
That's awesome.
And we got one last thing, you know, another death.
Yeah.
Sam Shepard, who you might know as a pretty damn good character actor.
Oh, yeah.
This is the year of character actors dying.
It is.
My favorite ever Sam Shepard role, Chuck Yeager. The Right Stuff.
Nice.
Oh, The Right Stuff. That's an 80s film that people don't talk about.
Yeah.
They should.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was in Days of Heaven, of course.
Yeah, I love him in Days of Heaven.
It's just an amazing film. He was in one of my favorite films of all time, The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
That's right.
And he was in a movie club film, Cold in July.
That's right.
He was the goddamn man in that film.
He was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Cold in July, you better get on that.
Get on that. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's an amazing film. I'm tired of all these cool character actors dying, man. Stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I have to say. I hope he rests in peace. He was an amazing actor.
Yeah.
And he will be missed.
Absolutely. You know, probably the movie I saw him in the most, just because I was absolutely in love with this film when it came out. And it's been a long time since I've revisited it, the movie, but Black Hawk Down. That movie got Kyle and me through some really, really rough times when we lived together and both of us were, you know, working minimum wage and you know how it goes and you're just scraping by and little victories like finding a movie you both enjoy and love that you can watch over and over again together. That was one of our go-tos.
I have a really weird story about Black Hawk Down.
Oh, yeah?
You ready?
Yeah.
So I used to have a customer who came into my store who worked in like Hollywood as like a grip or like a lighting guy or something like that.
Okay.
And he came in to the store one day and was like, I got something for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, cool. He's like, I know you like movies and I got something for you, but you can't give it to anybody.
Yeah.
And he pulled out an Oscar screener on VHS.
No way.
Of Black Hawk Down.
No way.
Like,
really?
He's like, there you go, dude.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy shit.
No way.
Wasn't even close to being in the theaters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
Holy shit.
I am privileged right now. So everybody I know watched a VHS copy
of
Black Hawk Down that year.
Dude, that's awesome. That's insane.
Yeah, so good.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool. So is that's, I guess, how they distributed the FYC screeners.
It was like, it was either DVD or VHS.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
That's
cool. Now it's all Blu-ray or DVD or digital of somehow on a secure site.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my stupid Black Hawk Down story.
Cool.
But yeah, that's it for me, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam Shepard, he'll be missed. Always a class act. And I wasn't aware of this, but he was a very talented writer as well.
Yeah, for sure.
That's something I wasn't aware of. I don't know how that flew under my radar, but that's something I'll definitely have to explore. Cool. So you ready to move on?
Yeah, man.
Okay. So let's get into the next part of the show, the rant. This is where we rant about anything movie-related. What do you have for us this time?
Some really interesting news came out today, and it really freaked me out. I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
You know how many people subscribe to Netflix?
I have no clue.
It's millions.
Every person.
Hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah.
If I was to say to you that Netflix was in debt, give me a ballpark, left field, I'm totally fluke guessing here number you think that Netflix is in debt.
In debt?
In debt.
Wow. They're in debt?
See, that alone freaked me out.
Yeah.
But
$100 million?
$20 billion.
What? Are you serious? How is that possible? Wow. How is that even possible?
I have no idea. That freaks me out.
Yeah.
How can the revolution get going when it's barely even started and Netflix could go under?
Yeah. Wow.
Somebody, I think it was the LA Times, wrote a story today about how they're like $20 billion in debt and they keep on borrowing and borrowing. Hmm. But everybody thinks they're a great company.
Yeah.
So they keep on lending them money.
That's unbelievable.
Meanwhile, they're making all these cool shows, funding all these cool movies. And you think they would, be able to balance a checkbook with that many people subscribing?
It's unbelievable. You know what I bet it is? It's all the people sharing accounts. Because I've got like 10 people using my account right now.
I know. I don't have a Netflix account.
Yeah.
I have somebody's password.
That's right. That's probably it, though. They just need to lock it down.
Yeah. It should be like two devices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But yeah, man, that freaked me out.
That's freaky.
Because Netflix is doing God's work right now, man.
They are.
They are creating great content.
Yeah.
And saving our podcast.
Oh, totally.
So I hope they get that together because that really freaked me out. Their stock dropped and.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Terrible.
Crazy.
But that's enough. It's not really a rant. It's just like a kind of like a wake up call. Like, holy crap. Like, Netflix could go out of business tomorrow.
That's unbelievable. That would, that would alter my life.
I feel so bad for the person who paid for the month that I use, the Netflix account.
Yeah, that's right.
They might lose like $10.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. Imagine that. Let's make a movie about what it would be like if we lost our streaming services.
Dude, that could be a movie in 10 years.
Yeah. That'll be the Aaron Sorkin scripted movie. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. We told you not to make Hemlock Grove.
That's right. You wanted season 3, you idiot.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a low-hanging fruit there.
I actually kind of liked Hemlock Grove.
Okay, I didn't watch
it. It's kind of shitty, but I felt really bad for liking it because it's so terrible, but so kind of good at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah.
And for us in Canada, they bring CW shows to Netflix because there's no CW here, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that would suck.
I watch iZombie every Thursday when it was airing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be bad news, man.
Hmm.
What's up with your rant?
My rant. This is about Christopher Nolan. Not necessarily me complaining about Christopher Nolan, but me complaining about the people who watch Christopher Nolan films and just have their pre-written things they're going to say about his films. You could do a huge laundry list. He's cold. He doesn't understand human emotions. You're not going to be able to understand Tom Hardy when he talks. It's going to be problematic in some areas. Exactly. I don't know where these people are seeing these movies, but, We'll get into it more in the movie, but I was really shocked to hear criticism around the dialogue in Dunkirk, and it is very minimal. But people saying it's like Bane all over again, and I'm just like, maybe your theater sucks, maybe you suck. I don't know, dude. Like,
I've seen it twice and didn't have a problem either time.
Yeah, same here. I sat and I watched and I listened, and I think there are some... In the movie, we'll get into it more, I promise, but there are some things that are deliberately hard to hear because he's immersing you in the experience. So
this isn't like Interstellar, where he purposely mixed it down.
Yeah.
So people couldn't hear what was being said.
Yeah.
I got a problem with that. But no, I had no problem with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing how Interstellar sounds really good on Blu-ray.
It does.
It's almost like Warner remixed the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, the way some people complain about it makes it sound like Christopher Nolan isn't technically proficient, but he's probably one of the most proficient technical filmmakers going today. And it just drives me insane.
And if you don't think Interstellar has heart, you didn't watch the film.
Yeah, dude. I don't get that. Like, the scenes with his daughter, like, every single scene, especially when he's, like, driving away from the farm.
Did Adrian cry during Interstellar? Oh, you're damn right he did.
Multiple times, dude. Multiple times.
Yeah, so it's all people's preconceptions of Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Just watch the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Objectively.
Yeah. I don't get it, but I just wish people would change their pre-written criticisms of his films. But hey, I'm on the side where I enjoy the film, and I'm happy with that.
3%, baby.
That's right. That's right. We enjoy movies here. So on the topic of Christopher Nolan, let's move on.
That's a segue and a half.
That's right. Always looking for that opening. Let's talk about our first movie, Dunkirk.
The enemy tanks have stopped.
Why?
Why waste precious tanks when they can pick us off from the air like fish in a barrel?
There are 400,000 men on this beach.
So what does IMDb have to say about Dunkirk?
So yeah, directed by Christopher Nolan, but you already all knew that. Allied soldiers from Belgium, the British Empire, and France are surrounded by a German army and are evacuated during a fierce battle in World War II. Finn Whitehead, Damian Bonnard, Cillian Murphy, Mark Rylance, Tom Hardy... We saw this in 5 perf 70mm, folks.
Yeah, man.
This is probably the second preferred way to see it, because he did shoot it in IMAX. There was an IMAX option, but it was way in the boons in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
We had to think about getting home.
Oh, yeah.
So, film started at 12 noon.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer started up, and there was like a massive flicker to the trailer. It was the Blade Runner trailer first. It was really flicky. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh man, something's going on. Obviously, it's like a tension thing with the film.
Yeah.
They stopped it. And we're like, oh.
That freaked me out.
Adrian's losing his mind.
Yeah.
So the manager comes out and he's like, so we have a tech. We can call him. He can come and fix it. Probably take like 20 to 30 minutes. Or we can play it in DCP. Everybody's like, no! 70mm!
Yeah.
You charge just extra money for the 70mm,
yeah,
too.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. So, like, 20, 30 minutes later, they got it fixed. Everything was fine. Man, love me some 70mm.
Yeah, dude.
So good.
Yeah.
I've seen it in digital. So
yeah.
Have you.
Yeah.
Did you notice differences?
Well, the biggest difference, and we talked about it briefly, and these are things we could have told each other before even seeing the film, is that the colors are a little brighter, a lot brighter for digital, but for film, it's a little bit toned down a bit.
Which I like.
Me too. Yeah, that's not a negative thing.
No,
it's the way it's intended to be seen.
It looked real, as I saw an IMAX digital, and it looked really good, but it looked pristine and overproduced.
Right.
There's a word.
Yeah.
I love the look of a 70. I love the sound of a 70. Adrian talked about how he loved the projector in the background.
Yeah, hearing the projectors.
Like,
we don't get that
anymore. Like old school technology, and it's like something you're used to from back in the day, and it put a big smile on my face too. So, I think 70 millimeter is the way to go if you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I walked into a theater that was playing it in 2K digital.
Okay.
Not the IMAX version.
Right.
It looked like shit.
Wow.
Compared to the 70 millimeter print.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap. It was half the resolution.
Yeah.
It looked terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And they misframed it.
No way.
Yeah. Oh. Capital Six Downtown misframed Dunkirk.
Wow.
I probably should email them about that.
Yeah. Was it bleeding a bit? Was that the issue?
No. There was probably a good 6 inches on the top and 6 inches on the bottom. They zoomed it in.
Oh, really?
It should have been to the frame line, right?
Yeah.
It was zoomed.
Oh, okay. Because when I saw it, I think it bled a little bit off the bottom.
Wow. So they probably tried to fix it.
Tried to overcorrect.
But didn't. Yeah. Did a bad job.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, too bad.
So yeah, man, enough about the tech aspects of it. You know, 1 day, 1 hour, 1 week, 3 stories.
Yeah.
This is the best directed, best shot, best scored, best film of the year so far.
Yeah, man. High fives all around.
Dude. I can't tell you how much this film blew me away. I white-knuckled it the whole way.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine something beating this. This was my movie, man.
Yeah.
I can't explain to you how you've seen all these war movies during your life, and they all should be, it should have all been done before.
Oh, yeah.
And then Christopher Nolan does it. And it's just like, what? What?
Yeah, this is a new kind of.
This is so different and so cool and tension filled, and it was it's like nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, bravo, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, man.
Enough of his, even if he is a robot.
That's right. I have written in my notes here that if you really want to go crazy, it is a war movie, but it is also a survival horror film.
Totally.
Without the gore that we're used to seeing in previous war films, say from Mel Gibson, for example.
Hacksaw Ridge. Oh, man.
Hacksaw Limbs. But yeah, this is the most immersive war film I've seen since Saving Private Ryan. And I'm not really ready to compare this to other war films. I don't want to categorize it. I don't feel the need to rank it.
So you don't need to like bring it towards like a Terrence Malick kind of war film versus a Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, shut up. Right. Yeah, but I love this film through and through. Every frame. It's really hard to put into words how much because it's you're watching something that's so harrowing, so brutal.
Dude,
and you're going, I love this.
The thing I like about this film, war is super cold and imperfect. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't know if the dude beside you is going to die 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
And that this film, I felt that.
Oh, yeah.
Every time a bomb was dropping, I was scared.
Me too.
Yeah. Like, this is how well this film worked. I was freaking out. Every time I heard a plane go by, I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's perfection. Like, that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you didn't have to even do anything on the screen. It's a freaking sound.
It's just a sound, yeah.
And it's almost like I was there and had PTSD. Like, yeah. It was so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that you always learned growing up, right, in the history books about how terrifying those dive bombers sounded to the Allied forces. And I'm not really the war expert in terms of movies, but this is, I think, the first movie that really nails that fear, that tension, that just dread of here comes a dive bomber and there's nothing I can do about it.
It's also about how gross war is and how unforgiving it is, and how I'm sure all these guys were super gung-ho about going to war before they got there, and now all they're trying to do is survive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
They're probably all going to die.
Oh, yeah.
And they all know it.
Yeah.
And it's gross.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie is.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of gross at times.
It is.
Like, your buddy beside you is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You talked to him 10 seconds ago, but he's dead.
Yeah.
And oh, shit, here comes a plane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on a boat in the middle of an ocean.
Yeah.
All I can do is jump off.
Yeah.
And probably die because I can't swim to shore.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And these waters could be infested with U-boats.
It's like, holy shit. And that's this movie. It is a nasty piece of work at times.
It is.
but you're just at awe at the technical mastery behind it. Mm-hmm. I don't think this film had a lot of CG in it.
No.
If a plane blew up, if a boat blew up, I think Christopher Nolan blew them up.
Yeah, it looks like they actually sunk a lot of ships in this one.
Pretty cool for scuba divers, but probably not for Warner's budget.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, and one thing I wanted to mention really briefly here is there was some added context to this movie for me because our friend of the show, Kyle Wells, before this movie came out, he said, "Spoiler alert, my grandfather lives in Dunkirk." And I just... That knocked me out, dude.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty touching stuff.
It was really cool to think about that and think about how his grandfather was there. And
probably got a hell of a story.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was really, really amazing. And for Kyle to share that and share his thoughts on the movie, it was really cool.
So, yeah, you were talking about Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
And it's like... He has a fighter pilot's mask on, so Tom Hardy does more with his eyes than he's done in every other film he's ever done.
Yeah,
Tom Hardy is great in this film, and you can't hear a damn thing he says half the time.
Yeah,
because his eyes are telling you the freaking story.
Oh yeah,
holy crap, is he great in this film?
Yeah,
Mark Rylance, always class.
Yeah,
he is the freaking class of this film.
Oh yeah,
I love him in this film.
Yeah,
his patriotic duty says he has to go and try to save people with his boat, with his son and one of his friends.
Yeah, and he does it with no hesitation.
Nope.
Yeah.
Even when it gets hairy.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're staying out.
Yeah, yeah.
Classy guy.
Oh, for sure.
You know, the two quote-unquote leads who probably have the most screen time, Finn Whitehead and Damian Bonnard, they're good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the real surprise... I hate saying this. I really do. Because I'm not a big One Direction fan. But you know what? I don't really mind some of his solo disc. Harry Styles is pretty good in this film.
I think he's great in this one, dude. Yeah.
He's got some heavy lifting in this film, does. Too. It's not just him, you know, flicking his hair back.
Yeah.
He's here to rock and roll. And he's doing a really good job. And, obviously Christopher Nolan isn't going to put him in this film. If he sucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Seriously, people?
Yeah, he's got a great presence to him, and I'm going to be straight up here. I said to Sarah about halfway through the movie, I said, that kid is probably the most handsome kid on the planet, and that's just not fair, and I'm campaigning for him to play the next James Bond.
And he can sing.
And he can sing, and he can act, and he's in Dunkirk, and he's awesome in Dunkirk.
Yeah. And Cillian Murphy's really good in Dunkirk, too.
Oh, yeah.
I always thought he was good, but he's really good in this one, and Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer, man.
Great score.
Brings the goods, man.
Great score. It's a really weird score. It's not a Hans Zimmer score.
Yeah, it's not the bombastic, in-your-face Hans Zimmer score.
You'll hear drums and, like, a timepiece going tick, 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 and it's just like, this is Hans Zimmer?
Yeah, man. I was surprised it was him at the end, because I didn't know, like, going into this movie, I saw the trailer, but I'd never really pay attention to the credits going
in. I just assumed, because it's Christopher Nolan, I just assumed it was Hans Zimmer.
Oh, that's a safe assumption. That's, like, his dude, so.
But, dude, this feels like the lock for Oscar.
Yeah.
We're talking picture, director, cinematography, sound, you name it, editing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it could win 10 to 12 awards. Without flexing.
Oh, yeah.
It's that good.
Yeah.
And, you know, fuck the Oscars, but this film's the goods, and it probably should win. It's going to be really cool when my number one film of the year probably is going to win Best Picture.
Oh, totally.
So
that'd be a huge celebration.
I think really highly of this film.
Me too.
And I tell everybody I know to go and see it.
Yeah.
And for not being a very... You know, nice film and very, usually films like this kind of die as like an art film. This has been number one 2 weeks in a row.
That's cool. It
beat out the Emoji film, which we did not see, thank God.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a 5 out of 5, no doubt, all day. And
same here.
I think it's the best film of the year.
Yeah, same here. I did want to mention one more thing.
No.
No, all right. Moving on.
I'll say it. I'll give you permission.
Thanks, man. I wanted to mention that there are three main stories going on in this film. One takes place on land, one takes place on sea, and one takes place in air. You mentioned it during the synopsis of the film.
I was trying not to be terribly spoiler on that, so tread lightly here.
I think these stories overlap. And the thing is, Christopher Nolan tells you the time frame that each one takes place in. And you'll notice some things happen during the day, some things happen during the night. And I had an easy time watching it, but it's confusing some people out there. I think that's really unfortunate. I thought he laid it out pretty clear. And for them, for Christopher Nolan and his team to accomplish this mass, grand scale storytelling of three stories that cross over here and there, I thought it was a master stroke of storytelling. And it's unfortunate it doesn't work for everybody. That kind of breaks my heart a little bit, because I think some people think he's trying to be too cutesy or trying to do the Memento thing or something, but it's not. It's just, it's the best way to tell this story. And if you try to think of it in a linear fashion, it would have been a lesser film.
Yeah, he is probably the premier North American auteur right now. Mm-hmm. Say what you want about Fincher or something like that. Yeah, Christopher Nolan, blank checks.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, just keep on making sweet movies.
Yeah.
He hasn't made a bad movie.
Yeah, yeah, everything's worth watching, worth talking about.
Like, I think his worst film is his first film, and it's a good film. It's not a great film.
Oh, Following?
Yeah, but it's okay. Not a great film, but yeah. It's probably his worst.
Yeah, it's still really interesting, though.
It is. Yeah. Like, it's black and white. Yeah. It looks really good. The story is kind of decent. It's not, like, Memento or anything like that, but it's still a good film. But, yeah, just, yeah, keep on giving him money.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So go see Dunkirk, damn it, and see it in 70mm IMAX if you can.
We talked way too long about Dunkirk.
No way, dude. I could go on for another hour or two, or 1 week, or 1 day, or 1 hour.
Wow.
Anyway.
Genius. Well,
let's move on. Oh, I'm silly. Let's talk about our next movie. This one is called Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
We need to talk.
Oh, it's dark in here. Look,
sorry. If you don't help me find Valerian, then this bullet's gonna find you. You're up first.
No. It's to avoid such situations.
But all of our information
is divided three ways.
Kill one of us.
And you kill the information.
What a pity that would be.
Okay, you're gonna have to give me credit, though, because I don't have much on me.
Oh, how tiresome.
If the commander were here,
he could use the converter to pay us.
But he's been abducted.
Precisely because he had the converter on him.
Unless for security reasons.
Someone else was carrying it on them.
How in space did you get that info?
It's not info.
Just deduction.
We know how humans work.
They're all so predictable.
Clearly, you've never met a woman.
Okay, so what is this movie all about?
Directed by Luc Besson, a dark force threatens Alpha, a vast metropolis and home to species from 1,000 planets. Special agents Valerian and Laureline must race to identify the marauding menace and safeguard not just Alpha, but the future of the universe.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Wow, that sounds interesting.
That sounds so cool.
Do you remember our year-end show last year? You were like, what's your most anticipated film of this year? And I'm like, Valerian.
Yeah, man, I remember that.
Yeah.
I was pretty stoked for it, too.
Because it was Luc Besson coming back to what Luc Besson used to be.
Yeah.
Fifth Element Luc Besson.
Oh, totally.
You know, good stuff. Boy. Boy, was this a shit film.
Yeah, it really is pretty bad. And the one thing I do want to say before we get too deep into this one is that I have a lot of respect for the vision of this film and appreciate that Besson is trying something here. It just doesn't work.
Are you saying like the actual vision or the actual look? Because I think the Fifth Element looks better than this film.
It's nice to look at, but I mean like the vision of the world building, the story that's going on here, all the different races, the multiple dimensions. There's some cool stuff with the dimensions they cross over to, and there's just a lot of moving parts, but it's a mess.
Plot-wise, it's non-existent.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It really is.
Yeah, I can't even get behind the look of the film. Like, I think it looks, as I said, I think it looks worse than The Fifth Element.
Wow, yeah.
I think it's really terrible.
Yeah.
Plus, I saw it in 2D. It looks like a giant digital video game.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's so shiny.
Yeah.
It's gross.
It is.
It's everything I hate about digital projection and digital filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I hated this film.
Yeah, me too. Well, I don't know if I would say I hate it, but definitely left a bad taste in my mouth. And I think that this one, it's dead on arrival because of Dane DeHaan and Cara Delevingne. They've got no charisma, no chemistry, and they're just sarcastic assholes throughout the whole movie.
Do you remember when Dane DeHaan was like upcoming greatness?
Oh, yeah.
How everybody was like, he's like the next Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah.
This is a cure to wellness. Cure for wellness. Like he's having a really bad year.
He is. Yeah.
That's one of the cure for wellness is terrible.
Yeah, and he was in the Amazing Spider-Man 2 before this.
Yeah.
Was awful in that.
God, I tried to forget that. and Cara Delevingne's not bad. She's just not great either. Like there's nothing there either.
Yeah, she looks the part, but
yeah, like when you're the best actress in the or actor in the entire thing is Rihanna.
Oh yeah,
and she's not an actor; she's a freaking pop singer.
She is.
And she acts circles around Dane DeHaan.
She does. I actually mentioned that in my notes. I was really surprised by Rihanna's performance. I liked her quite a bit, and maybe she should have been in the lead role.
That might have actually been better.
Yeah.
Luc Besson should be ashamed. Remember a couple years ago when he retired?
Yeah.
He came back and made that with the family or whatever.
Oh, that's right.
Robert De Niro. And he made a really good movie that I liked, Adele Blanc Sec, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a female Indiana Jones film.
Okay.
It's so good.
Nice.
Weird doesn't make it good.
No.
It really doesn't.
No.
It just makes it stupid.
Yeah.
If you can't get behind anything other than the look, mm-hmm. you've made a mistake.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't even get behind the look.
Yeah. Yeah, the look's terrible. The dialogue is just bad. The dialogue was so bad. Like, there was moments where they were just being sarcastic shitheads for no reason. Like, their commander guy was like, "Where are you? You're 20 minutes late." And Dane DeHaan goes, "Time flies when you're having fun." And it's like, did I miss a scene? Like, what was fun about that?
There was nothing fun about the film at all. Did you like Jupiter Ascending?
Hated that movie.
Because I think you're going to like this film if you like Jupiter Ascending.
I guess so.
Because everybody tells me that's a masterpiece, but I think they're full of shit. So
it's a piece of something.
Yeah. Avoid this at all costs.
Yeah.
Not even a Netflix film. I couldn't even say watch this on Netflix because it won't be on a big screen.
Yeah.
It'll be on a small screen looking all compressed. So no, it'll look like crap on the big screen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's terrible.
It is.
I can't recommend this to anybody, but people will like it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so dull and it's so long. That's the thing about it. At the end of the movie, I was just exhausted because I was like, I sat through all of that and it felt like nothing happened. And like the resolution of the movie, I was just like rolling my eyes. I was so upset.
I felt like I had to finish it.
Yeah.
That's a glowing review if there ever was one. Bill Harris, Green Screen of Death.
Yeah.
I felt like I had to finish it.
With a sad face at the end of it. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's torture.
And I agree, dude.
I hope you guys like it.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congrats. It'll be gone next week, or maybe even by the time you hear this.
That'd be good. It bombed.
Oh, yeah.
That movie cost $200 million to make. It made $15 million opening weekend.
Yeah. And it's an indie film, right?
Yeah.
Like it's his studio.
It's independently financed.
Oh, jeez.
So they can't
that sucks.
I guess they could probably write it off, but wow.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks.
They don't have a Harry Potter movie opening 2 months later to pay for their disaster.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
No, it's not. It's a terrible film.
It is.
Don't be nice to it.
All right. Well, let's move on.
I'm tired of being nice to films.
Well,
I really am. Yeah. I'm tired of being nice.
There you go. Well, now that we've kicked some dirt onto Luc Besson and his people.
His people. Come on.
Let's let's talk about our next. Oh,
before you said people. I should have brought this up. Did you notice on the freaking commander deck, Louis Leterrier, Olivia Megaton, and a couple other directors who are friends of Luc Besson were in the film?
I didn't notice
that. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
He put a bunch of his buddies in the film.
Oh, geez.
Just to like, I don't know, make them feel good or something. Well, guess what? It didn't make me feel good. It was fuck this film. Fuck you, Luc Besson.
That's hilarious.
Watch Adele Blanc Sec.
Yeah.
It's a good film. It's probably on Netflix.
Yeah, check it out. Yeah,
terrible film. Sorry, I hate hijacking, but
all good,
there
man.
You go.
All good. Well, while Bill is going nuclear,
I'm in a mood.
While Bill's going nuclear over here,
oh,
let's talk about our next movie.
Do it.
Atomic Blonde.
Oh, so nuclear.
Well, he's very curious what you're doing here in Berlin.
All right, so for those who haven't seen this trailer 30 million times by now, what is Atomic Blonde all about?
Directed by David Leitch? Leitch?
Yeah, we'll go with Leitch.
I'll go with Leitch. An undercover MI6 agent is sent to Berlin during the Cold War to investigate the murder of a fellow agent and recover a list of double agents: Charlize Theron, James McAvoy, Sophia Boutella, Eddie Marson, and Bill Skarsgård. This film tries really hard.
Oh boy, does it ever.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Man, is it so phony.
It is.
Like, the only thing going for this film is two fight scenes and some decent music, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's being generous.
And a pretty kick-ass performance from Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
I like her in the film.
Yeah.
But man, is it trying really hard to be cool.
Yeah.
I just didn't find it cool.
Yeah. Well, they use every spy movie trope, microfilm, list of double agents, Russians, Cold War, 80s music.
The Andrei Tarkovsky film Stalker.
That was way too on the nose. That pissed me off, dude.
Okay, so have you seen Stalker?
I haven't.
Okay, so the main character in Stalker, this sucks because I totally want to use this as a movie club movie whenever my Blu-ray actually ships.
Yeah.
It's been 3 weeks, Amazon. You bastards.
Yeah, what's up?
In the movie Stalker, the guy takes him on a trip through a zone into another area, which is pretty much what James McAvoy's character does. He takes him through the underneath the wall and into like West Berlin or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So he's a stalker.
Oh, okay.
Symbolism.
Just way too on the nose.
It's so, and I was just like, oh, okay, that's cool.
There were some
thanks for showing it on the big screen.
Yeah.
That looked really cool, and the poster is really cool, and it's one of my favorite films of all time, but, you know, thanks.
Yeah.
Your movie still sucks.
Yeah, and some of the musical cues, they got way too cutesy with. That's the fine line you dance with, you know, like Baby Driver. That's a film that used music that pushed a narrative that added those ingredients to his stew of a badass movie. But this one, it's just so artificial.
99 left balloons.
Yeah. This is one of those movies that uses a quote-unquote cool soundtrack to mask all the shortcomings of this film. And this film is at least 5 hours long. It sure feels like it.
That might be the greatest line you've said on this podcast.
Yeah. I was dying for an intermission. I was 30 minutes in. I was like, what did I do? It's
Can we agree on Charlize?
No, I don't think we can agree on that.
Okay. The thing I liked about Charlize was that she kicked a lot of ass, but also got her ass kicked.
She did.
And I liked that everybody in the movie actually showed damage.
That's true.
That's cool.
That's a good point.
That's not really shown a lot. Like, you know, John Wick gets his ass kicked and gets shot, but he tends to just get up the next day.
Yeah.
That's kind of lame. Yeah. But yeah, she's always taking ice baths and covered in bruises. That's really cool. I will give them major props for that.
Yeah, that's true. It's just, I guess, and this is what sucks about this movie, is I think I might have enjoyed it a little bit more if I didn't see the trailer, because every single action beat in this movie is in the trailer.
Kind of is.
If you want to watch Atomic Blonde, just watch a trailer and you've seen everything. And there's this quote-unquote one shot that everybody's talking about, which is a fake one shot. It has at least 14 cuts, and I'm not joking about that. Like, you just have to know what to look for. I know it's supposed to be stylish, it's supposed to be stylized, it's supposed to be awesome badass action, but I felt removed. I was just like, am I watching the sequel to Hardcore Henry, the female edition? I hated this movie, dude.
I watched a screener to a festival we're not allowed to talk about quite yet.
Yeah.
And I watched a movie this morning that in the opening 10 minutes of this film was better than anything in this film.
Oh, okay.
And it was a female doing the Hardcore Henry thing.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Oh, cool.
And it looked original and real and really cool. And it switched to first person and to third person, and it switched back. It was so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, the fights are fine.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. I'll give you that. But the plot's really dumb. It's really convoluted. Everybody is not what they seem.
Yeah.
Except for you kind of figure it out.
If you've ever watched a spy
and
movie.
And I'm just like, okay, I get it. Yeah. I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
You know, literally everybody is not what they see, including the Charlize character.
Yeah.
Figured that one out too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
They foreshadowed that 45 minutes before it happened.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for that, by the way.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the thing. Like, it offends me when they play it like we didn't know that was going to happen. When they play it like it's a surprise.
Yeah.
When it's a wink at the camera, you're just going, screw you, dude. Like, don't insult me like that.
Yeah. McAvoy's fine.
Yeah.
Looks like he's having a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's true.
I like James McAvoy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good actor. But yeah, it's the Charlize show.
Yeah.
And you know what? Keep on making female ass-kick films.
Mm-hmm.
I will support them.
Yeah.
I want those. I want these to work. Just make a better film.
Yeah, that's my thing.
It has nothing to do with gender or, you know, whatever. It's to do with the fact that it's just not a very good film.
Yeah.
If it was a really kick-ass female film, I would praise it to the stars.
Yeah.
But that also means that if it's a shitty one, I'm not going to praise it.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with anything other than that.
Yeah.
It's just not a very good movie.
Yeah.
But I love Charlize.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman's still out in theaters right now. So if you haven't seen Wonder Woman, go see that instead.
Or rent Raw on iTunes.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got the same complaints. Like, I want to be able to champion a female-led action movie, spy movie, but it has to be good. And this is not a good movie, and I can't get behind it. So.
No, I wish I could. I really
Me
do.
Me too. Me too.
No, nothing would help. Nothing would be greater than me to take my 12-year-old cousin to this film because she's cool and can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
And yeah. I'd love for her to watch this film because I want her to be seeing kick-ass females.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not going to put her through this crap film.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry if you liked it again.
But the thing is, it has its champions out there. People who saw it at South By loved it, so.
The festival goggles.
It has no shortage of fans. So, again, we're the 3%, and it just so happens to be that way.
I like it.
Yeah.
I love being the 3%, man.
Oh, yeah. 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 You'll only get truth and honesty from us.
Yeah.
Let's move into the next part of our show, the Movie Club. This is where Bill picks a movie. It's always a first-time viewing for me. We watch it, and we come back here and talk about it. As mentioned previously, this is our 50th selection for Movie Club, which is, I think, a really cool milestone.
Yeah, seeing how it was more or less just me, like, randomly suggesting it during an episode.
That's right.
Just like, maybe we should do that?
Yeah, that's right. Because I think there was a point where almost every episode you'd mention a movie, you'd be like, this is the guy from this, or this reminded me of that. And I'd be like, oh, I haven't seen that. You're finally just like, all right. And
yeah.
You came up with it on the show, yeah, on the spot.
It doesn't always work.
Yeah,
but I think it's valuable, and I think you've had your movie going experiences raised to another level because of these films.
Big
even
time.
If you didn't like it, that's the thing. I think you always learn something, even if you don't like a film.
Yeah,
and I think you've taken some cool stuff from these films.
Oh yeah, big time.
Yeah,
big time. And a couple of these movies have even been on my shelf for like years. I just never watched them.
Unforgivable.
That's right. So. This one, the number 50 Movie Club selection, this one's called In the Mood for Love. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about this film?
a Jet Tone Films production of Movie Club Film Number 50 from the year 2000, In the Mood for Love, directed by Wong Kar-wai, one of my top five directors of all time.
Nice.
One of my, probably my top five films of all time.
Nice.
Two neighbors, a woman and a man, form a strong bond after both suspect extramarital activities of their spouses. However, they agree to keep their bond platonic so as not to commit the similar wrongs. Maggie Cheung, Tony Leung, and Christopher Doyle's photography. I'm glad you liked this one. I know you liked it. So was a make or break. Might not be another movie club if you didn't like this one, because this was like this is an all timer for me.
Nice.
And it was like, I don't really know Adrian's style if he doesn't like this film.
Oh,
like,
totally.
I would be completely thrown off, and it would be completely screwed up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. First off, is there like two better looking people in the world than Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung?
No, they are by far the most beautiful humans captured on film.
So yeah, this movie is just perfection to me. Like the acting, the directing, the score, the costume design, the cinematography. It's like beautiful and haunting at the same time. It's as I said, it's perfection. It's like the culmination of all of his previous films, and it all came down to this one. Like you just saw Chungking Express.
Yeah.
A totally different film.
Oh, big time.
But all of his other films were kind of like this. Well, were relationships, either gay and lesbian or straight.
Mm-hmm.
The two leads, Tony Leung with his awesome suits and his slicked back hair, and Maggie Cheung with her like amazing dresses that go all the way all up her neck, and she shimmies across the screen like she knows she's the hottest chick in the world. Everything about this film. It's a film about restraint.
Oh yeah,
like talk about films that do too much. This film does not do too much. No. It's holding a lot back, actually.
Oh yeah,
it's like I love this film because it's all about that one decision you make, and it kind of haunts you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing really happens.
Yeah, that's right.
Like it's supposed to be a love story.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't kiss.
Yeah, that's right. They hold hands.
They hug.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. And they're reluctant to do that.
Totally.
Like, they don't even want to do that. But yeah, this is one of the best shot films I've ever seen.
It's outstanding.
It is. It's one of the films where the camera movements add to the narrative and add to the tone of the film. And you could see that this movie was released in 2000. You could see how the movie Carol may have been inspired by the style of this film. I don't like comparing movies.
Oh, don't worry. I got a hot take for later that's going to blow your mind.
But yeah, like the way they shot the film through either like, a pane of glass, which was maybe a little bit dirty or had some rain on it, or shot from the other room. And it's almost like you're flying the wall, but maybe you're not in the same room, but you're observing the way somebody else might be observing these two.
You talk about the cinematography. I got a couple stats for you.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So this film had two DPs.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you want to know why?
Oh, why is that?
Because it took 15 months to shoot.
Seriously?
15 months.
Oh, wow.
And Christopher Doyle had to leave.
Wow.
He had another thing to do. Like,
I didn't know that.
He was like, I kind of have to go. It's been 15 months.
Jeez.
So 15 months in, a new cinematographer comes in, Mark Lee Bin, who, along with Christopher Doyle, shot the hell out of this film.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I can't tell the difference between who shot what.
Oh, yeah.
And that, to me, shows that Wong Kar-wai was all over this film.
Oh, yeah.
He knew exactly what he wanted, and he told people what to do. If you have two DPs, it should look different.
It should, yeah.
But it doesn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what's different.
Couldn't tell you. Yeah, what I thought was really interesting about this film, too, is the edit of this film. Like, there were transitions between scenes, and you didn't know you were watching a different scene, a different time. a different dinner.
Even. He doesn't care. He just wants you to follow along.
Yeah. And I did have to rewind it a couple times, which is kind of cheating, but it's like, oh, I'm at home. I'm like, wait a minute, her dress changed. Hang on, I need to confirm this. And that's kind of cheating the system, but I thought that was awesome.
Or the scene will be like talking about a trip that the husband's going to have to make, and then it'll cut to black, and then they'll be talking about the trip. Mm-hmm. He's already come back.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Time lapse, man.
Yeah, and there's even a scene where she confronts her husband, and she's just practicing with Mr. Chow.
They never show the spouses.
Yeah.
It's always from, like, you see, like, their legs,
mm-hmm.
or you hear the voice. Yeah. You never actually see their face.
Yeah.
Weirdly, once again, you saw Chungking Express.
Yeah, that's right.
In the Mood for Love was Wong Kar-wai's first film shot on film.
Oh, really? Okay.
Chungking Express was shot on digital.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it wasn't shot on a red camera.
Yeah.
They didn't have those back then.
Yeah.
This was below probably 2K digital video.
Yeah.
And man, I love the look of this film. It's got that grainy thickness to it.
Oh, yeah.
That you only get from like films before 2000.
Yeah.
Which just blows me away.
Yeah.
The DVD to Blu-ray bump showed that grain. Mm-hmm. Love the grain.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few little things I love about the film.
Okay, yeah.
That I personally think are like really amazing standout scenes, because this is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
So I'm going to fucking talk about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Bear with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the rice cooker scene.
Oh, dude, yes.
Where it's 1962 Hong Kong.
Yeah.
They've never seen a rice cooker before.
That's right.
And it is the greatest thing they have ever seen.
Yeah.
Can you get me one? Oh, my God. This is so great.
Yeah.
And then the rice cooker goes, bing.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's try the rice.
It's so exciting. Yeah. That was a great scene. And something we take for granted now, right?
Because
you could open up any cupboard and somebody's got one. And
the degenerate friend.
Oh, yeah.
Who blows all of his money at a brothel.
Yeah.
And then comes to borrow $30 and then wants to go drinking.
That's right. What was his name? Ping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's trying to pick up Maggie Cheung's character throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
So good.
He's awesome.
Yeah. How cigarette smoke is a character in the film.
Oh, totally.
Just the way they frame it, it almost feels like it's clouds in the sky. It is so breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
These people know what they're doing, because I could never do something like that. This is the shot composition. Just mm-hmm. blows my mind. Tony Leung's hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
The number is 2046.
Okay.
The name of Wong Kar-wai's next film.
No way. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird semi-sequel to In the Mood for Love, but it gets really futuristic.
Okay.
This was, you know, like 1960s Hong Kong. This is like in the future with robots.
Oh, wow. Huh.
It's kind of weird.
That's awesome.
Tony Leung's speech about his feelings
mm-hmm.
and how he breaks down. And at the end of it, he goes, you know, you better keep a better eye on your husband.
Yeah.
After he's like totally broken down, I was just like, holy crap. It blows my mind that scene every time.
Yeah.
And the last scene,
mm-hmm.
which is my hot take.
Yeah.
The whole idea of him in the, if you haven't seen it, In the Mood for Love, I'm about to ruin something, but I got to say it. The way he shouts into the hole his secret, so he'll be able to say it,
mm-hmm.
and you know what he's saying.
Oh, yeah.
He loves this woman,
mm-hmm.
and he covers it up in moss.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of the film.
Yeah.
After they show some really cool video of ruins.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
You've seen Lost in Translation.
Oh, yeah.
This is my hot take.
Yeah.
Does Sofia Coppola rip the ending off of In the Mood for Love?
Oh, okay. I didn't think of that.
I remember when I first saw Lost in Translation, that's the first thing I thought of. It's like, holy crap, you just totally stole the ending of In the Mood for Love.
Oh, no way.
Because at the end of Lost in Translation, Scarlett Johansson says a secret thing into somebody's ear.
Yeah.
And we don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's right.
And I listened to a podcast a couple weeks ago where she talked about how much she loves In the Mood for Love.
Wow. Huh. Did she stuff moss in that person's ear?
We'll have to ask Bill Murray there.
That's right.
But yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's
and, cool. You know, the usual stuff. 2000 Cannes Film Festival, Tony Leung, Best Actor.
Nice.
And, you know, Oscar forgot to watch it.
Yeah.
Did not get nominated.
That's a shame, dude.
Just absolute
shameful.
Damn shame. Yeah. But yeah, dude, I think it's one of the best films ever made.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, You talk about your what you think are the best films ever made, mm-hmm. and what are your favorite films ever made.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I kind of think there's a difference.
There is, yeah.
Because I don't think Empire Strikes Back is one of the best films ever made.
Yeah,
but it's a favorite of mine.
Oh yeah.
I don't think this is like one of the greatest films ever made, but it's probably my second favorite film of all time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this film.
Yeah.
Always have, always will. And I'm super glad you liked it because Adrian texted me last night at like midnight. He's like, yeah, dude, about to watch In the Mood for Love. And I'm like, holy fuck, he's going to fall asleep.
Oh, yeah, no. No, I it gripped me right from the get-go.
I've talked way too much.
That's all good, man.
I apologize.
That's all good, man. Yeah, no, I was really, really busy last week, and just a lot of stuff came up. Time didn't permit me to watch a movie until last night, the night before we recorded, and that's less than ideal. I try to watch at least 3 to 4 days ahead of time so I can dive into like the extra features if I want, or rewatch a couple scenes, or watch it again if I have time, stuff like that. But I still love this film and I had a great time with it. And I talked a little bit about the camera movements in this movie. And there was one shot in particular that just really like slayed me. Was when the two of them, what were their names? Mr. Chow and Mrs.
Chan.
Chan. Yeah.
Chow Chan.
I believe it was after he moved away and you see kind of shots where they're going between the two of them sitting against a wall and just that sadness they feel, because they're apart. There's geography between them now and there's not as much time. And I think that kind of just illustrates, you know, if you have a good thing, just capture it, man. Like just seize that, just do it. Don't be sad. And maybe that's not the point of the movie. That's what I kept thinking though.
Shia LaBeouf meme right now.
Yeah.
Do it.
Do it. Yesterday you'd say you'd do it tomorrow. Just do it. But I just, this is one where if you have, it's going to depend on your life experience, how you view the film and how you connect with certain moments in the film. And that was one that connected with me because, it was living a life with regrets is a very sad thing.
For sure.
So
I hope a couple things you took away from this film are you have that violin stuck in your head.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because the score is amazing.
It is.
And a shot of Maggie Cheung walking towards her noodles.
Oh yeah,
downstairs, just kind of sashaying back and forth.
Oh, big time
in slow motion because nobody shoots slow mo like Wong Kar Wai.
Yeah,
I'm glad you liked it. I guess movie club can continue.
It can, and it will. That's right. Now, before I came here, you mentioned to me, you're like, get your top five ready. I was like, oh man, we're gonna go there.
Last episode, I was like, you know, whatever.
We'll do something at 100.
We'll do something at 100. But you know what? Fuck it. We'll do something now.
Yeah.
First off, before we do that, let me announce the new film.
Okay.
So it was Pride Month last month, or technically, I guess,
July.
Because we're going to be, this will be posted in August.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to support that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm down with that. And I was like, you know what? I want to challenge Adrian, and I know he hates musicals.
I don't hate musicals. I don't hate musicals.
Okay. It always seems...
Hey, I enjoyed Rock of Ages, dude.
Really?
Yeah, that's a bad musical.
You're that guy.
That's right.
So, one of my favorite musicals of all time is a Pride Month movie, man.
Cool.
From 2001, John Cameron Mitchell, the great John Cameron Mitchell's debut film, Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Cool.
Nothing like this, sir. You've never seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah,
because there's nothing ever or will be like this film.
Really?
It is really original.
Yeah.
And I dare you not to like these songs. Wow. Like, they're so good.
Cool.
And the story is great, and the acting is great, and I'm going to be really sad if you don't like this film.
Yeah, right on. Really, no, it's all good, man.
Really sad.
Yeah.
This is almost an all-timer for me, too. Like, I really love it.
Cool.
Not available on Blu-ray, only available on out-of-print DVD.
Wow.
So.
Right on, dude.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Want to know something really interesting? we've reviewed a movie before that referenced this movie. You remember... Split. During the Q&A for Split, M. Night Shyamalan mentioned that he had a copy of this DVD, like, always sitting close to his monitor at home, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and that's why he named that character Hedwig.
Damn right.
It's after this movie.
Cool.
So, like, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
So, right on. So, yeah, as we always mention, if you want to join Movie Club, you can watch the movie. Send us your thoughts through Twitter, Facebook, and we'll read them on the show.
Yeah, dude. I hope you like it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm trying something here.
Yeah.
And it's a strange film, but I think you'll dig it.
Cool.
I think the power of music will overcome you.
Hell yeah.
And,
hell yeah.
Bring it on. Yeah, I got lots to say about this one.
Cool.
I listen to the soundtrack weekly. Nice. I think it's that good. So,
nice. That's awesome. Cool. And yeah, I also just wanted to mention... If you want to send your thoughts on any previous Movie Club movie, because maybe you're not caught up to us, maybe you're not current, maybe you're listening to this 2 or 3 months after we released this episode, you can send us your thoughts on any movie in Movie Club. We'd love to talk with you about it, and would love to read it on the show.
Cool. Dude.
Yeah.
Top five.
Let's get into it. So we're going to talk about our top five movies that we've watched in Movie Club, and there's 50 of them in total.
It's impossible, because all these films to me are 5-star films.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Should we just go through our list each?
No, I say we start at 5 and
okay, just do like we do the top 10
thing. Go down to 1.
Okay.
But I have 6.
You have 6? Okay, well you can start at 6.
Okay, so I just couldn't not say this film. Like, this was really hard. You texted me and you were like, dude, this is evil.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like on the verge of tears.
I was like, oh yeah. Now that I'm doing it,
yeah,
it kind of does suck.
Yeah.
Because my number 6 film is the best film of the 1980s. Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing.
Oh, nice.
How is that number 6?
Yeah. How is that number 6? That's crazy.
It's a perfect film.
Yeah.
And it's number 6.
That's crazy. Man.
Yeah. We said a lot about Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
Multiple episodes, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's the best film of the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was a pretty good Martin Scorsese film in there.
Oh, yeah.
So for me to say that, that's pretty big.
High praise.
Yeah.
High praise.
If you haven't seen him, Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. So my number 6, the honorable mention, my God.
Jeez.
Do the Right Thing.
Nice, man.
Is Do the Right Thing on your list?
It is on my list.
Nice.
Higher on my list.
See? Adrian knows what's up.
I know what's up. Yeah. Now, the way I just wanted to maybe offer a disclaimer. The way I constructed the list is there are some movies that I left out that I know are technically quote unquote better than some of these selections I've made. And I think that's what you're getting at when you talk about, you know, your top films versus your favorite films, there are some that you enjoy more than other films. And even if it's, you know, quote unquote, less technically perfect or whatever, it's just, you know, it's like food. You have your favorite food you like to eat, and that's what you're going to eat.
Yeah. Well, my number 5 is that film.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Same for me. I'll start things off for us.
Sure.
My number 5 is Houseu.
Nice.
I love this film, dude. It's one of those movies where I feel like I need to introduce this film to all of my friends and family who haven't seen it, or even if they have seen it, I want to watch it with them.
Totally.
And have that experience with them, because this is just such a weird movie, but it works. Like, it's weird, but it's not trying to be weird. It just is Houseu.
Yeah.
And the edit for this film, like, they cut things a little short or things go a little bit too long, but it's perfect in this film. And it's just this weird movie that I loved so much.
As far as broken films go, this one is probably the best broken film of all time.
Oh yeah,
it shouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
And for all of our Vancouver friends, it's playing at the Rio on a midnight show.
Oh cool.
I think next week or the week after.
Nice.
You all should be there.
Oh, yeah.
Support this one.
Yeah.
It's called House in North America, in case you didn't know. But it's a damn good film for being so bloody weird.
It is.
But I love it.
Nice.
And I was afraid Adrian wasn't going to.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
But you surprised me, and I was super happy.
Yeah, man.
Was that part of our Halloween series?
I can't remember. We'd have to look it up.
Because I know I did Dead Alive.
Oh, it might have been, actually.
It might have been Hasu, because I'm pretty sure I did a Serbian film before that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Fucked me up.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
Serbian film is not on my list.
Okay.
Even though it damn well should be.
Yeah. So what's your number five?
My number five is the film that Adrian was talking about, the favorite versus best, The Wild Bunch.
Okay, yeah.
I love The Wild Bunch.
Yeah, me too.
It's not the best film ever made, but I'll be damned if there's a better Western than The Wild Bunch.
Yeah.
And I love Sergio Leone.
Hell yeah.
But man, The Wild Bunch is everything I want in a Western.
Yeah.
It's a 2.5 hour movie that feels like it's an hour and 15 minutes long.
Oh, yeah.
Tight.
And you've got these big stars competing for the screen, and it doesn't feel like some of the bullshit you see nowadays. No. It's just great actors doing great things and a great movie.
Yeah, it's like the old guys who are just so skilled coming up against the new age of weaponry, and we'll see who wins.
Yeah, yeah.
And boy, is it bloody.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
There's a lot to love in Wild Bunch. That's actually my next selection. That's my number four movie.
Nice.
Wild Bunch. After we watched it for Movie Club, I think I picked up a copy and went and watched it with my brother Kyle, and we loved it. And that was a special night. Watching The Wild Bunch, and to be able to share that with my brother, it was really something else.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoy The Wild Bunch. It's like, I know it's a remake and everything, but it's great. Like, you can't deny the characters, the story, the action. Like, and I remember you telling me how they shot the film. Like, sometimes the squibs were off or the sound was off, so they had to reshoot those big, massive scenes again. And that's crazy to me.
Yeah, the film that really introduced violence into North American filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Blood.
Yeah.
You know, right. This and Bonnie and Clyde were the films that really stressed the rating system. The Wild Bunch was X-rated when it first came out.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was a genre-breaking film.
Yeah.
And it's lovely.
Oh, yeah.
For being so violent, it's sure like an opera.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lovely. My number four?
Yes.
Is that your number four?
That was my number four.
Okay. Yeah. This might be higher on your list.
Okay.
Doctor Strangelove.
Higher on my list.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the newer entries on my list, we just did this one, and, you know, still shocked that Adrian hadn't seen Doctor Strangelove.
Yeah, that's
Stanley freaking Kubrick.
Yeah, man. There's no excuse.
Do you have any other Kubricks you haven't seen?
I think there are a couple.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll have to get those to you. That's crazy, right?
Yeah. I'm guessing Lolita.
Yeah, and I have that. I've owned it for like 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you seen Barry Lyndon?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, okay.
I have a copy of that at home.
Those are usually the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the definitive kind of like anti-war film.
Okay.
It's everything that shouldn't happen in a war, including, you know, generals who think countries are going to steal his semen, and weird Nazi people who can't keep their arms down. It shouldn't work, but it's an absolute farce.
Okay.
And I think it's one of the great comedies of our time.
Oh, absolutely.
And the thing is, some people don't think it's a comedy. Like,
really?
You get like people get different vibes off this film.
Wow.
Which I think is really cool. But yeah, Dr. Strangelove. Cool that it's higher on your list.
Yeah.
Still haven't bought the Criterion Blu-ray.
Yeah. It even costs though, an arm and a leg.
Even though Canada. I have to now, because Adrian told me it was better looking.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and more special features, which are really freaking cool, man.
Damn it.
Sorry, man.
So yeah, Dr. Strangelove, number four.
Cool. So my number three, I don't know if this will maybe be on your list. I don't know. That's the thing. There's 50, man. And I had to go with this one because Rififi was one of the movies on the movie club that just absolutely blew me away. And I just... I felt like I'd been lied to my entire life by every other heist movie, because this is like the definitive heist movie.
It's the blueprint, man.
It is. Yeah. Like, this is the skeleton for every other spy movie or a heist movie. And I had a really good time watching it. And it's one that I'll be revisiting quite a bit, and one that I got a lot out of that one, watching that one.
It's a classic. Yeah, not on my list.
Okay.
But this was tough.
It was really tough.
Yeah, it's the definitive heist film of all time.
Yeah.
You know, just the way they break into that building.
Oh, yeah.
Like, legit looks like it could be still done today. It's so technically yeah. perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a brilliant film.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, man.
Number three. This is where it started to get really tough.
Okay, yeah.
It's like, you know, almost six-star films.
Yeah, oh, totally, yeah.
Number three is Best of Youth.
Okay.
Movie club film number one.
That's right. That's what we started with.
Yeah. And, you know, because I'm not willing to play nice, I made Adrian watch a 5.5-hour film as the first film for Movie Club.
That's right.
And I think he was pretty pissed that it was 5.5 hours.
I think I had to watch it in two separate installments.
I watched it theatrically at the Vancouver International Film Festival with a 10-minute break.
10-minute break? That's all you guys got? Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And Granville number six.
Huh. What was that like?
Amazing.
Nice.
I still think it's probably the best film I see at that festival.
Cool.
Which is pretty high praise.
Cause oh, yeah.
My top 10 is usually made from that festival. Yeah, it's like The Godfather, but without the mob.
Oh, totally.
Lesser people, but just a family drama. And, man, has there been anything other than that scene with the brother doing that thing that might have been the most heartbreaking thing ever in a Movie Club movie?
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to be really vague here.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That scene still, I think about it, like, hurts my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a brilliant film. If you haven't seen it, it's really long, and I apologize, but so worth it.
Yeah.
It's a 6 out of 5.
Like, oh, yeah.
Films that long shouldn't work.
Absolutely.
Anything over 3 hours should probably not work, but this is 5.5 hours.
Yeah. And one thing I always say, though, about that runtime is some people will complain about the runtime of a movie, and then in their next breath, they'll go and watch Daredevil season 2 on Netflix in one sitting. It's like, something's not adding up there, dude.
I have something in Lightning Round that's 6 hours long, TV-wise, wow. And I watched it straight.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's cool.
There you go. I shouldn't talk.
Right on.
So, yeah, number three, Best of Youth.
Best of Youth.
It's on Netflix.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so
check it out.
Yeah, you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. My number two film, we talked about this a little bit already, Do the Right Thing. This is one of those movies that was a major void in my film watching catalog.
Yeah, I don't know how you hadn't seen that one.
Yeah.
But of course, Adrian was like, yeah, I haven't seen Do the Right Thing. Next episode.
That's right.
Thanks for the hint.
Oh, man. Yeah, this one, it really rocked me, man. I think it's probably best that I waited this long because, like, I don't think I would have been able to comprehend it the way I would have through more mature eyes and more mature life experience, and just witnessing the events we've seen unfold in real life over the years when it comes to, you know, people like to sugarcoat it and call it racial tension. I just call it straight up racism.
Yeah.
The racism we've witnessed in our lifetime is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, hasn't changed a lot in the last 100 years or so. We've still got a long way to go. And I think Do the Right Thing gets to that point a little bit. And of course, there's more to it than that. It's just a great film with amazing performances all around.
And the thing about Do the Right Thing is that it shouldn't be getting more topical.
Right, yeah.
But it is.
We should be looking back and going, remember when things were like that.
This film was made in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's more important now than it was then.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, yeah, that's really sad.
And yeah, we saw this last month at the, I guess it's almost a month and a half from now.
Yeah.
At the 24-hour movie marathon at the Cinematheque. And Who picked Do the Right Thing?
I don't know.
Somebody did.
Yeah.
One of our crew did.
Oh, Kyle.
Yeah, he's like,
right away.
He's like, I hope we can see Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, it was cool to see that on the big screen. And yeah. It plays no less than it did when I first saw it. It's still a masterpiece.
Absolutely.
And yeah, Movie Club, man. I'm glad you got to see that.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, you still don't know how you had to see that. But that's cool.
That's right.
That's cool.
I just never made the time.
We're making up for lost time.
That's right.
That was your number two?
Yeah.
My number two is a film, one of the probably the first film that Adrian wasn't quite on board with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like either the second or third film in the Movie Club. And I think if he rewatched it, he might get in tune with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it kind of blew over him a little bit because it was one of the first kind of weirdly contentious Movie Clubs, which are always fun because I don't always like people liking stuff.
Yeah.
I like conversation about why you didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the film is Lars von Trier's Breaking the Waves.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah.
And it's a really challenging film.
It is,
And it wants to hurt you.
Yeah.
He's trying to hurt you.
Yeah.
But I like my toughness, man.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those films that I think one day you'll pick up and you'll be like, holy shit, Bill was right. But,
I think you're getting at the root of what it was for me is him trying to hurt me and me just putting up my defensive barriers.
Yeah.
And that kind of maybe took away from the experience for me. And the thing is, I could recognize the brilliance of the film. I just felt very defensive while watching it, which is not the way you want to watch a movie. You just want to let yourself go and just give in to the experience.
But yeah, if there was ever a film that you put your guard up for, it's Breaking the Waves. It also features probably the greatest closing scene ever in a film.
Oh, dude, that's amazing.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Breaking the Waves, it's a challenging, tough film, but that's why I'm here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I try everything.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to always be a happy film.
No, it doesn't.
No.
And that's what I love about watching movies. Like, one of my favorite movies of all time, a couple of my favorite movies are really sad to watch, you know, like Blue Valentine. I love that movie, and I've seen it maybe three times, tops, and I don't know if I'll ever watch it again.
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
It's a tough film.
It is tough.
But it's a brilliant film.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I watch it going in, each time I watched it on a repeated viewing, I knew I was going to feel hurt throughout this film. I was going to feel some kind of pain. I did it anyway, because it's a great film.
Every time I watch that film, when this is the final shot of the film, he's walking down a street.
Yeah.
And the grizzly bear song comes on.
Oh, yeah.
Alligator. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
You know, giant exhale.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a tough film. But
it is.
Hot damn, that's a good film.
Yeah.
That was my number two.
Number two.
Yeah.
Right on.
What was it? Did we do your number two? I'm confused.
Yeah, we did my number two. Now I'm on to my number one, which previously we talked about, Doctor Strangelove.
Nice.
What's the full title?
Or how I learned to stop worrying about the bomb.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice now. The first time, the satire angle didn't really click for me until Slim Pickens confirmed the order, and he went into his safe and took out his cowboy hat. And the whole time he's like looking at his buddies, making sure nobody sees the combination. And I'm like, whoa, what's he going for here? And he pulls out a cowboy hat. I couldn't stop laughing. There was like a good 5 minutes of me laughing. But the really cool thing, though, is that I watched this with my brother Kyle, and for that same sequence, he got emotional. Like, he was like, oh man, that's so fucking cool. Like, he feels that American, and he feels that patriotism. He needs to do his mission, and he's getting into character by putting on a cowboy hat. Kyle was deeply moved by that.
Yeah.
And I was moved also, just in a different direction. And this is one that I was so happy to share with my brothers. And it's so hysterical, man. It's so funny. And with the final beat in the movie, and I mentioned this to you before, you have the incredible brilliance of Peter Sellers delivering one of the, if not the funniest, final line in a movie. And you're howling. And then it cuts to
nuclear Armageddon,
nuclear Holocaust.
Yeah,
and it's just so harrowing, and it's such a weird thing to go through, dude.
Thing is, I have after we did that show, a friend of mine and I were talking about it, and when I said that some people don't take that film that way, a friend of mine and I had a conversation where he talked about how that film scares him.
Yeah,
because he's sure that's happened. And we were 10 minutes away from a war.
Oh, really?
Like, one little thing goes wrong, and it's Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, that movie freaks me out. Like, I'm sure that that's almost happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, but yeah. It scares the shit out of me.
Oh, totally.
And I'm like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally see that.
Plus, Dr. Strangelove plays like third-year Trump.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, we're getting there.
Yeah. But I don't know if we'll meet again, is the thing.
No. And, go to my bunker. It's a scary film, but it's a lovely film. And it's a great film. And that's so wicked that it's your number one.
Yeah,
and you watched it the first time like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Fuck, that rules.
Yeah, man. And I have the Criterion Blu-ray. Had to get it. And it's skyrocketed to being in the conversation for one of my all-time favorite films.
That Stanley Kubrick guy, he was pretty good.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Can you guess my number one?
Your number one is going to be from the Three Colors trilogy.
We'll just go the whole thing.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not choosing.
Yeah.
My favorite movies of all time, the Three Colors trilogy.
Nice.
What can I say about these that I already haven't said 15 times? The best films ever made by my favorite director of all time, Krzysztof Kieslowski. If we're talking top tens, he's got another film in my top 10, Double Life of Veronique. Mm-hmm. I freaking love Krzysztof Kieslowski.
Nice.
These were his swan songs.
Oh, yeah.
He died
a
couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
Really sad, but everything about these films, the first film is very dark, the second film is very light, and the third film is very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
He runs the entire table here. And what do you want from me? I've said enough. The best films of all time. I didn't know if Adrian would like them.
Mm-hmm.
They're very particular films. And the fact that he already owned these films and hadn't watched them made me want to slap the shit out of them.
That's right. Yeah. And this is one of those ones where I recognize that it's technically better than, you know, some of these ones I mentioned on my top five. But maybe I just didn't have that personal reaction I had to the, you know, these other five. That doesn't make it a lesser film or films. Because they're brilliant, man.
First time I ever saw these films, saw them theatrically.
Mm-hmm.
Second time I saw them was on a really crappy DVD. Third time I saw them was at the Pacific Cinematheque with subtitled Chinese prints.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Loved every damn frame.
Nice.
The subtitles took up like a third of the screen.
Yeah.
Didn't care at all.
Wow.
I could have watched them again.
Yeah.
I freaking love these films. Awesome. I watch these films once every 6 months.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I swear I still get stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a dense, amazing filmmaker.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen the Three Colors trilogy, what is wrong?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Don't be Adrian.
Don't be me. What I'd be curious to study a little bit more in this in those movies is what was going on in the political climate during these movies, because he had something to say, right?
One character did get smuggled across a border in a suitcase.
That's right.
If that means anything to you.
That's right. Stuff like that. It's like
off to the landfill.
That's right. Yeah. So stuff like that. I'm very curious to learn more about that. So that, I think that's amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, Movie Club. That's awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Totally different films on our list.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. There were some that almost made the ones that didn't quite make the cut that were in the mix. Sorcerer was one of them. Just masterclass intention.
See, I would have flipped that.
Yeah.
Wages of Fear.
Yeah, that was also in consideration, and French Connection was also...
Can't go wrong with that
I had
film.
Penciled in, but then I was just like, I was going to go with, like, I had it in mind, like...
a top 20?
Yeah, I was going to go with the theme, like, number 5 was going to be what I consider to be the best screenplay, which was going to be...
Three Colors Red?
No.
Damn you, Adrian.
I got that wrong again. What's it? I'm drawing a blank. The Mark Ruffalo film.
Oh, You Can Count on Me?
You Can Count on Me.
That almost made my list.
Yeah.
That was probably number 7.
Yeah. So I was going to go with, like, you know, best screenplay, best comedy, and best heist. I was going to go with that, but I was like, no, I'm just going to write the ones I identified with the most closely. So, yeah, it's awesome, dude.
This could be a really long episode.
But it's all good.
It's cool. I think that was cool enough.
Yeah, it's good content, and if anybody cares to skip ahead or skip back or whatever, we always have the show notes there. That's what it's for.
Yeah, just watch movies.
Just watch movies.
That's what this is all about.
That's right. So we can move on to our next part of the show, Lightning Round. This is for other movies we've watched between last episode and this episode. We just come here and talk about them in shorter form.
Except for one might get a little long.
One might get a little long. We'll do that one second.
Okay.
I've got one movie here, which is available on Netflix, which everybody should check out. It's called The Invisible Guest. Did you see this one yet?
No, but, okay. But that was a fantastic festival.
It was, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's a really cool mystery thriller whodunit kind of movie. And that's about all I want to say plot-wise.
That's cool.
It's just really cool execution. It looks beautiful. It's shot beautifully with some really good performances. And I was all the way invested in this movie and enjoyed every second of it. It's just a damn fun movie to watch.
Me and my film festival brain.
Yeah.
As soon as you said it, I was like, Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so The Invisible Guest, it's on Netflix. I think it just came out a couple weeks ago on Netflix. And the second movie, this was the second movie we watched on our Vancouver day trip. So because Dunkirk was delayed by about 40 minutes, we didn't have time to catch up and have lunch with our friends. We had to hustle to downtown Vancouver. Over to International Cineplex, International Village.
Yeah.
And we saw A Ghost Story.
Which still hasn't opened here, by the way.
That's right. I was hoping it would open last week.
I want to watch it again.
Yeah, dude. David Lowery.
Who made Ain't Them Body Saints.
Yeah.
And Pete's Dragon. Weird filmography.
That's right.
Wow.
Pete's Dragon, I'm determined he was just a name on the seat while Kevin Feige directed it or some crap. But yeah, Ghost Story, man. This is Rooney Mara, Casey Affleck.
Yep.
They're a couple, and they're in love. They're not always on good terms. They fight like any other couple fights. And do we want to? Yeah, we want to.
Something happens. And somebody dies.
One of them dies. And it's about to, like, and this is one of those movies where I could ask you what it's about. I could tell you what I think it's about. We could ask our friend Melissa, who joined us for the movie, what she thinks it's about. You could get three completely different answers. And the cool thing is, none of us are right or wrong. That's just what we took out of the movie. What A Ghost Story is, to me, is it's about love, it's about loss, and how we cope with these things. Because I don't know about you, man, but I've lost a lot of loved ones in my life, whether it's friends or family.
Yeah, I have too.
It doesn't get easier. And in my culture, you know, I'm First Nations man. In my culture, we're just supposed to, this will sound kind of cold and kind of harsh, we're supposed to move on right away. We're not supposed to hang on to these people because they need to move on in their lives. When they pass, they need to move to the next dimension, the next, to the creator, whatever you want to say.
To the next thing.
The next thing. But if we hang on to them, if we feel that sorrow, we keep them here, and we don't want to do that. So for me to watch somebody else from a different culture, different background, different age, talk about grief and thoughts about the afterlife and what we do while we're alive, while we're grieving these people, it's just, it floored me, dude. I wasn't ready. I was not ready for that movie.
I think we can actually talk about something about the plot.
Okay.
I think it's in the trailer.
It is.
So Casey Affleck's character dies.
Yeah.
And legit, he's in the morgue mm-hmm. with a sheet over him.
Yeah.
And he pops up.
Yeah.
And he's a ghost.
Yeah.
From like a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah.
It's a sheet with a couple of eyes cut out.
Yeah.
And he's a ghost.
Yeah.
And he's going to go back to his old place where his girlfriend lived. And until they can reconcile mm-hmm. and get back together.
Yeah.
Except for it doesn't, it's real life.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And right. It's all about, yeah, it's what you said. It's all about the love and the loss and, you know, hanging on for that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie got me differently than you because I thought it was going someplace it wasn't actually going.
Okay.
And it really shocked me when it didn't happen.
Okay.
And I'm not going to spoil that, but that floored me.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, holy crap. I just spent the last half hour thinking something. I was completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm usually not wrong about these things.
Yeah.
You know, I figured out Atomic Blonde, but not a ghost story. So, yeah.
That's right.
It's beautiful.
It is.
It's shot Academy ratio with, like, rounded corners.
Yeah.
Almost looks like a photo.
Yeah. I have that in my notes. It looks like as if a Polaroid camera could shoot film.
Yeah.
That's what it's felt like to me.
It's beautiful.
It is.
And it's one of the most honest, heartbreaking films I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably my number two film of the year right now.
Yeah, it's way up there for me.
Yeah, it's one of the best films of the year. And it's super limited, so if you have a chance to see it, jump.
Oh,
run.
Yeah.
Parkour. Do whatever you need
parkour,
to do.
Yes.
Do whatever you need to do to get to see this movie.
Safely. Do it safely, though. Don't drive too fast.
I've heard a couple people say that it took a while to get into it. I might agree with that because I didn't really know what it was doing. But once it hits a certain spot, it's aces.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the kind of movie where after I'm finished it, I feel like I've had a glimpse into the soul of David Lowery. And I told you on the way home, I was like, if I could do one thing right now, I'd embrace David Lowery and like hug him for like an uncomfortable length of time and just tell him, I'm here for you, man.
It's tough too, because it's one of those films where, you know, we were with, you know, Melissa, and it was me, you, and Melissa, and it was like, we got out of the film, and I really didn't want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just kind of wanted to, you know, think about the film, adjust it,
mm-hmm.
you know, plot-wise.
Yeah.
And it's one of those films, man. Like, I still think about it.
Oh, yeah,
we saw it, like, a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And then it's mm-hmm. the second best film of the year.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's scary. Might even be number one after second viewing.
It could.
I think it's that good.
It's a phenomenal film.
Now that I know what it is,
yeah.
It might become better.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess we'll see in December.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a freaking masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
It's like my second 5-star film of the year.
Yeah. 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 And it's very low key, brilliant in every way. Like the set design, the way they frame it. The way they shoot it, there's a lot of geometry. I mentioned to you on the way out, I was like, you know, there's a lot of things going on there with shapes, and I don't want to talk too much about that either because I don't want to ruin the experience.
Ruth shit.
Yeah, there's stuff going on. There's some geometry, mathematical stuff that I can't comprehend. Somebody else might be able to, but that's what thrills me about watching a movie like this is there's so much going on that you could probably get something new out of it every time you watch it.
Also, something happens in this film that isn't scary that made me jump to the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
Something happens, and I was so in tune with this film, it destroyed me enough to make me jump.
Yeah.
And that is a sign of a great film, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to slice somebody's throat or
mm-hmm.
go up in a tree and go, what are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This was a nothing shot, and it scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Like, it's a genius film.
Oh, yeah.
Genius film.
Yeah.
One of the best films of the year.
Absolutely.
And everything else just is nowhere near it.
That's right.
On my list, at least.
Yeah.
Actually, not true. There's one other thing that's really two. Okay, there's a few things.
Okay, yeah.
But are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. That's it for my lightning round.
All right, cool. I saw Lady Macbeth.
Okay.
Which I think is opening this week.
That's right.
Yeah. It's been available online for a while. iTunes, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
About a woman who is sold off in her early teens to a pretty violent man.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of just doesn't want to take it anymore. By any means necessary, she is going to prosper.
Mm-hmm.
It's nasty. It's kind of rude. The lead performance is one of the best performances of the year.
Oh, wow.
Frances Pugh. Florence Pugh. Yeah. For some reason, I... Yeah.
Yeah.
Screw that up. But yeah, It's a really good film. Seek it out. It's probably not going to play in everybody's neighborhood, but it's one of the really good films out right now.
Nice.
Trailer is great. So if you like the trailer, you'll probably like the film.
Right on.
The Little Hours, little indie film with, Dave Franco, Aubrey Plaza, Alison Brie.
Yeah.
Hated this film.
Wow.
It's all about these nuns who, the Dave Franco character shows up and kind of turns their world around. But legit, the joke of the film is, oh my God, nuns swear.
Really? That's it?
That's the joke of the film.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And it runs for 90 minutes or so.
And I hate Aubrey Plaza.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm stuck. Hated this film. Super disappointing. Heard lots of good things. Hope you like it.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Oh, it's too bad.
Yeah. I watched... kind of illegally, I watched Top of the Lake Season 2.
Okay.
I used a VPN and watched it off the BBC website.
Nice.
Yeah. It's technically not available here till September. But,
nice.
But I was not going to be stopped.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet. So, yeah, if you want to watch Top of the Lake Season 2, have a VPN handy.
Yeah.
It's like Master of None... Legion good.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Cool.
Elizabeth Moss is a cop who in Australia who, God, I don't want to, I can't ruin this.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out for
Elizabeth Moss.
Okay. Yeah. And there's a really big Hollywood star in it that I didn't know was there.
Yeah.
And it's the freshest TV show I've seen in a very long time.
Wow.
It is freaking great.
Oh, cool.
It's better than season one. And I thought season one was spectacular.
Cool.
I don't want to talk about it. It's not out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it illegally.
Nice.
You have my blessing.
There you go.
Is it legal? Is it illegal or illegal if you just use technology?
I don't know.
For something that's already free?
That's right.
That's a question.
That's a good question.
Weirdly, out of the blue, I'll just say the third episode of Game of Thrones Season 7 was fucking spectacular.
Hell yeah, dude.
Maybe a top 5 episode of all time.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was like, well, Arya wasn't in it.
Oh, jeez.
Like, shut up.
Yeah. So much happened, dude.
So much happened.
Oh, man. And Euron could be my favorite new character.
Yeah.
I love him, dude.
So good.
He is like, because was he just introduced last season?
Yeah.
Yeah. For a guy to come so late to the franchise and just steal the show, I think that's awesome.
He owns every scene he is in.
Yeah.
And he was in that Ghost of Michelle movie.
That's right.
And he was so terrible in that film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lady Tyrell and her lady balls versus every other man on that show.
Oh, yeah.
Lady Tyrell wins.
Oh, totally.
She is awesome.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the great episodes. If you haven't seen or caught up on Game of Thrones, episode 3.
Yeah.
Be prepared.
It's the goods, man.
Eat some pizza beforehand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You need your strength.
Oh, totally.
We've been watching screeners from an unnamed film festival we're not allowed to talk about.
That's right.
Sorry.
We'll catch up soon, though.
We'll catch up soon. So, yeah, we've been a little busy with that. And finally, I caught up with a second viewing of Your Name.
Okay.
Yeah. Still really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Still one of the best films of the year.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, lovely film.
Yeah.
It's out on Blu-ray in Japan.
That's right, yeah.
And it's only $40.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling a little frisky, you can't wait for the Funimation disc.
Yeah.
I borrowed my friend's copy. It looks cool. Really good.
Wicked.
It's great.
Nice.
And that's it for me.
Right on, man. So that's lightning round. And yeah, this episode's a little bit longer just because we wanted to do something special for Movie Club. And that's fun. We like that. So,
and we make the rules, man.
We make the rules. That's right.
We run this shit.
We run this shit, dude. So I guess we can tell people what do we have to look forward to in the next episode. Is nothing at all?
Dude, it's August.
Oh, August is the February of summer.
It's the dumping ground.
Yeah.
So we're going in with an open mind on The Dark Tower.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Yeah.
But I still do not have very good vibes on this film.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you see Stephen King last week?
No.
Somebody was at it. Do you know the band Rancid?
Oh, yeah.
So they're a punk band from California. who were pretty big in the 90s. Some dude was at a Rancid show, and he turned around, and Stephen fucking King was in the mosh pit.
That's awesome.
Rancid show.
That's awesome.
Stephen King?
Yeah.
You rule.
Cool dude,
man. You're a cool dude. So yeah, Dark Tower, I hope for good.
Yeah.
I will watch anything Stephen King related.
Yeah.
He's one of the greats.
I am.
Just doesn't, yeah. Trailers did nothing for me. Kidnap. Heard of this one?
No.
Me neither. No. I haven't seen a trailer. Okay. It's got Halle Berry in it.
Okay.
Looks like...
I've heard of her.
Looks like a Halle Berry movie from 2 years ago where she gets kidnapped or something.
Is it a WWE movie?
Could be. We finally get an Inconvenient sequel.
That's right.
On Friday, which looks really good. We talked about it last episode because I thought it was opening.
Yeah.
It did not. Al Gore for the win. He's talking some good stuff. I like Al Gore.
Yeah.
And finally, we get to see Detroit.
We're the last people
on
the internet to see Detroit.
The new Catherine Bigelow film.
Yeah.
Looks amazing. Trailer is great.
Yeah.
Just let me watch it.
Yeah. I just want to watch it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of getting tired of being the last people to see the film.
Yeah.
And yeah, people saw this weeks ago. I have friends in Vancouver who saw this over a month ago.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. What the hell?
Yep.
Why don't these people expand their market to Victoria, damn it?
Yeah, pretty much. August 11th, the crappy horror film of the episode, Annabelle Creation. Annabelle was the Conjuring? Was it Conjuring?
I think so, yeah.
Puppet?
Yeah.
The
spin-off thing? Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Is it even directed by James Wan?
I don't think it is, but Adrian likes these kinds of movies.
I do.
There's a soft spot for him.
I do.
I know he does. That's right. I won't be seeing it.
I'll see it.
Unless I do.
Yeah.
I would say I won't, but I usually end up seeing it.
Yeah.
The Glass Castle.
Okay.
Dustin Cretton's follow-up from Short Term 12.
Oh, that's right.
With Brie Larson.
Yeah.
Looks really good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's limited or not.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it isn't.
Yeah.
I really want to see it.
Me too.
Short Term 12 is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I still cry when I watch that film.
Oh, totally.
And I watch it quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's one of my in-the-background movies.
Okay.
I like know lines of that film off by heart.
Nice.
It's such a good movie. Cool. One of the worst titles of the year. The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature. Are they down with OPP?
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know me.
Is this from the mid-90s?
Yeah.
Has it been shelved for 20 years?
I don't know, but man, no thanks.
Yeah.
Lesser animation?
Yeah.
I don't have time for you.
Yeah.
And Adrian doesn't like animation.
Well, if it's not Ghibli,
yeah,
I'm totally not interested. Or Laika?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not interested.
And Limited, we won't get these. But I really want to see them. Ingrid Goes West.
Yeah, that looks
cool. The new Neon film.
Yeah.
Aubrey Plaza, Elizabeth Olsen. Looks really good. And finally, we get to see The Trip to Spain.
That's right.
Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Saw the TV show. It was bloody hilarious.
Nice.
And I love these films.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
if you want to hear Adrian Charlie laugh,
dude.
He likes these films.
Oh, yeah. I love those.
Yeah. Man,
nonstop. So good.
And that is it.
Right on.
So a couple there if they open.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be a good show. Next show.
Yeah. Next episode, we could be reviewing Dark Tower, an Inconvenient sequel in Detroit.
Yeah.
That sounds all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sign me up. I'll see those. Cool. Thanks for that. I guess we can tell people where they can find us online. You're on Twitter.
I am at SoundJam69. Say hi.
And the show has a Twitter account. We're at @green_screen. I'm at @Adrian_Charlie. We also have a Facebook page. You can find us, The Green Screen of Death. Hit like. We also have a website, of course, which we launched a little while ago, thegreenscreenofdeath.com. You'll find some more coverage there and the occasional opinion piece or maybe a written review. Yeah, if you've made it through all of this show here, we thank you very much. I know it ran a little bit long, but we had some extra stuff. And as long as we feel comfortable with the content, we're happy with it. So, again, thanks to everybody who's checking us out. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you next time.
Peace.